Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the generous support of Meyer Bramley Insurance, serving Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas. Meyer Bramley Insurance can be reached online at mbi.agency or via phone at 844-890-2626. Catholic Conversations, where we talk about faith, family, and finance.
Hi, this is Paul Moore, sitting in for Jason Bramley here on Catholic Conversations. A little background on me. I write a column for the Catholic Post, the paper of the Peoria Diocese. I live with my wife, Mary Louise, in Germantown Hills, where we attend Our Lady of Lourdes Parish. Before, I retired as a government communications sort of person and moved to Illinois in 2018. We lived in Nova Scotia, Canada, where I come from. So I'm very happy to be here today in the Catholic Spirit Studios in Bloomington Normal with Faye Sebastian and Heather Canuel. And Faye's new book, Broken and Beloved, A Journey of Discovery, is available on Amazon. Faye is a retired clinical psychologist and was awarded the American Psychological Association Citizen Psychologist Award in 2018 for her leadership in working with underserved women and minority populations in McLean County. A native of the Philippines, Faye Sebastian earned a BA in history at College of the Holy Spirit in the Philippines, a BA in religious studies at Lourdes University in Ohio, a master in guidance and counseling at Ateneo de Manila in the Philippines, and a PhD in counseling at the University of Toledo, Ohio. So she's underqualified. She is an oblate of St. Mary Monastery in Rock Island, Illinois, and as mentioned, is the author of the just-released book, Broken and Beloved, A Journey of Discovery. Now, part of that personal and spiritual discovery led to the founding of Labyrinth Outreach Services to Women, a nonprofit that assists formerly incarcerated women to reintegrate into the community. Now, Heather Canuel is the owner of Heather's Parlor's Hair Salon in Bloomington. She's enrolled toward a bachelor's degree in Illinois State University, where she received the 2018 People's Choice Award at the Startup Showcase for Local Entrepreneurs. She is also a former client of Labyrinth and now mentors others. Faye Sebastian, your book, Broken and Beloved, traces a labyrinth of a life from a childhood living with your family of 10 kids, including yourself, in the Philippines, to a long period as a single woman living in the United States with a stopover at an ashram in India, to discernment as a vocation as a nun for a period of 3 years.
In Ohio.
Now, along the way, you moved from helping with the family business in the Philippines to the education sector and then to counseling. You married in 2011 and continued to pursue nonprofit opportunities to benefit the disenfranchised, women in particular. Now, can you tell us a little bit about the idea of the labyrinth or a maze, what it represents to you?
Well, for me, labyrinth really is an internal journey, though you do it physically in a structure. You walk the labyrinth, you know, and in that walking the labyrinth, you really go through a process of knowing who you are, you know, and most often the people who walk the labyrinth have issues, you know, whether it's personal issue in terms of physical health or whatever, or most of the time, you know, spiritual issues, you know. And so you walk on the labyrinth quietly, but you're also trusting and consenting that whatever happens, you know, as you walk it, you know, you will be given the message, not right away, but through the course of your, you know, your life, you know, that you will, you know. When we started Labyrinth in 2004, I thought about the name because I believe that every person, not just the women who were formerly incarcerated, need to go internally to be able to know what she will do, you know, with her life. You know, most often, you know, we have issues, you know, that we have to work on, you know, and resolve. And so with me, individuals needing help if they don't know who they really are, you know, and not working on those issues. Like I said, you may be giving them all the outside help, you know, the jobs, you know, or, you know, food and things like that. But until they have, you know, really put together the core of who they are, all those things that they get externally won't last long. And we have seen, and I have seen it, even in my work, you know, as a psychologist and in my volunteer work with Labyrinth.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You mentioned in your book a labyrinth that exists in the church. Is it Chartres?
In
France?
In France.
So I hadn't heard of that. So this is an actual physical labyrinth, which kind of looks like what we would see a cornfield where people make a maze out of the corn, but only it's a small one, but it's in this cathedral. And it's a spiritual practice of discernment that people walk through this, in a prayerful attitude.
Yeah.
And if, especially if they're looking for some kind of direction, or
exactly.
Maybe they don't know what direction they need, but they want something, and that this has people who are searching do tend to find something there?
We have here locally in town, in the garden of the Cancer Community Clinic, I believe it's exactly the same measurement as the one, you know, in France.
Wow.
Yeah. And I have been to that place also and walked it.
Yeah.
I think a few years ago when the Master Naturalist and Master Gardeners had training there, it was offered, you know, to the participants.
Right. Right. So you'd kind of conceive of the labyrinth as a process of spiritual and, I guess, not secular, but integrating your life with your faith but it's always a process of searching.
Yes.
And that if you approach it in the right way, you're more likely to find the answers to the unresolved problems that you don't even know you have, kind of thing.
Yes. Yes. Some also, you know, will use it as a way of, you know, calming themselves.
Now, you had an early exposure to women, helping women, and this is also in your book, when your mother provided support for a woman who was living in an abusive situation, and you remember her reaction to that.
Do I remember my reaction to
yes.
that? Yes. Well, first was I was woken up, you know, and she would come like maybe every week, you know. She used to wash the clothes of our aunt who lives next door. And so first was I was scared, you know, because you wake up, you know, somebody's crying, and then you see her bruises, you know.
Mm.
And I was really so scared, so I started, you know, to ask, you know, my mom, what's wrong, you know, with her? And so my mom then explained, you know, her life, you know, and what was, you know, going on. And the next feeling that I had was really a sense of security and safety that my mom, you know, didn't, you know, have that kind, you know, of experience, you know. Because I think, looking back, I think I was only 6 years old then. And when you see, you know, a black eye, you know, and you know that there was a force that happened and a violence, you know, that occurred, you know. And so as a kid, you know, it really got imprinted in my mind. And at that time, you know, my mom, you know, would just say, you know, to the woman, why are you still, you know, with him, you know?
Yeah.
And was, you know, really just trying to help her, you know, find, you know, a different way to live her life, you know. And, of course, I was still, you know, little, and only later on, you know, did I recognize that many factors go into being stuck in that kind of relationship.
Right.
One is self-esteem, you know, the woman didn't have, you know, enough self-esteem, you know. And then the woman in my book was really very small. And then the husband is really, you know, tall and muscular. And so I can understand now, you know, why she was, you know, thinking that to leave will be really, you know,
risky. Very, yeah. Thank you. Heather Canuel. Hello there, Heather. In an article published in Pentagraph in 2019, you're quite open about how the emotional harm of an abusive relationship that you had been in left you vulnerable. And you indicated that things got worse then from that vulnerability before they got better. Do you have any, tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would like to piggyback on what Faye was saying with a journey, a physical journey as well as a labyrinth. Because I too, when I grew up in a Catholic church. I went to Mass 3 times a week. I went to Catholic school. But I didn't know that deeper relationship. And it took me learning myself in a physical, intellectual, emotional, and spiritual way to be able to build from that. Mm. And that's what I call as a full woman, a PIES. P-I-E-S. Physical, intellectual, emotional, and spiritual. You have to build all the ingredients to your PIES. But, you know, taking my body and prayer life to a different level and to learning to listen and be calm, that's when I knew, you know, what that man was doing wasn't right. And I felt a power within myself because of my higher power that I didn't need that. Mm. You know, different age groups are taught different things, and some age groups were taught to kind of just be quiet, don't do that again, sweep it under the rug. But I think as women tend to progress, you know, in society, we can all find our strengths, but it's kind of developing that internal and physical and emotional and spiritual being, you know, that you can talk to or that you can love. That will give you that strength in those situations. Okay. And people like her mother that are helpful and they're kind of sent from somewhere, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, where did that did lead you to a period of being on the other side of the law, shall we say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you want to just detail that?
Yeah, unfortunately, because he was so abusive, I was scared and I would make decisions because he told me to.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I went to prison for driving on a revoked license, of all things. But I knew it was wrong, but he kept saying, you got to do this, you got to drive here, you got to do that. And I was scared of him physically and emotionally, so I would do it.
Yeah.
And it caused me to be the last female incarcerated in the state of Illinois that gave birth cuffed to a bed. But I have now since changed that law for 7 other states. So I do believe some things are in God's plan, and it's, you know, you go through things for a reason. I wish I would have had a better, you know, relationship with, you know, myself and self-esteem and self-worth and my higher power and God back then. So I didn't have to go through it, but unfortunately I did. And it's okay because it was a journey, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, out of that we call weakness, you know, God is in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we listen, you know, well, like, you know, what, you know, Heather said, you know, when you're in touch with that, then no matter how weak you were then, you know, God works through it.
Yeah.
It brings you a different, you know, place.
Yeah. And sometimes, I mean, a lot of us, myself included, have had quote-unquote crimes and misdemeanors that might have been not known. Heather's became known.
Uh-huh.
Maybe mine didn't become known. So, you know, we all have those errors in our past. But Heather, now behind bars, though, mm-hmm. once you were there, and I guess you had a baby there, too. I didn't actually realize that detail.
Mm-hmm.
Rather large detail. But did you, you found, was there a new, you entered into your faith more deeply when you
came to? Oh, yeah, absolutely. My nickname while incarcerated was Nerd. I took every single class and every single exercise I could. I read very deeply into the Bible. I did per mail Bible studies. I had somebody, they do, you know, some faith-based communities do visits into the prison, and I had thank God, brought me a mentor. Now, it took a while, but it developed with me reading Joyce Myers and my Joel Osteen, and just having discipline to listen. it really helped ground me a lot, a lot, a lot.
So the faith reawakening worked hand in glove, if you will, with the life and other aspects of your life, sort of a new plan.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Aristotle once said the only plan that ever failed was the plan that was never made.
Mm.
So it was then, once I was grounded, that I learned to develop plans. And I got out of prison running. I'll tell you what, I worked at a salon, I managed a salon, and then I was a salon owner for over 2 years that won awards, all within a 5-year period. Wow. But I properly planned, and I had a lot of faith, a lot of faith. But God puts great people like Faye in our lives.
And Yeah. Thank you for passing it back to Faye there for a second. Faye, you initially moved to the U.S. because your sister Tessie was lonely.
Yes.
And your first Christmas in Ohio was a difficult one.
It was.
Go ahead.
Well, like I said, you know, in the book, our Christmas is a family gathering, you know, and there's food. I always played Santa Claus to my family because I was the first one in the family to have a job. And so by September, I'm already buying gifts for each one. And then I would hide them in the ceiling.
Yeah.
And then one of my brothers found out, you know, where I hid them. And then, of course, he found out already what he will get, you know, for Christmas.
Yeah.
So that was really very, the first Christmas here in the States was really very, very
kind of sad. Quiet after all that with just you and Tessie.
Yeah, and we were in the convent at that time.
Yes.
I was checking out the Sylvania Franciscans. And, of course, you know, the nuns also were in their families.
Right.
So it was just my sister and I.
Yeah.
I remember we both cried, you know,
yeah.
But we didn't want to call because we will be wasting, you know, the long distance,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, long distance was a little different then.
Yeah. It was very hard. But again, you know, like, you know, Heather said, in every circumstance in our lives, you know, there is a reason, you know, for those, you know.
You're listening to Catholic Conversations. I should know what faith I'm conversing in. And we're going to be right back after a short break.
You're listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio.
Suppose a candidate said, "I support terrorism." Would you even bother to ask his position on other issues? Support of terrorism disqualifies him from consideration. So it is with one who supports abortion. That too is the taking of innocent human life, and support for abortion should disqualify a candidate from consideration. This is Father Frank Pavone.
Hi, this is Paul Moore, sitting in for Jason Bramley here on Catholic Conversations. We're here with Faye Sebastian and Heather Canuel, and Faye's new book is Broken and Beloved, A Journey of Discovery. It's available on Amazon. Now, Faye, we were talking there earlier about your first winter in Ohio, and Christmas was difficult, kind of lonely, a lot different than with your large family in the Philippines. But you did find, with a friend of yours, I think, you found a use for the aluminum cooking trays that you found in the kitchen of the convent. And what use did you were able to make of those?
Oh, a penny was we entered both at the same time. So we were both seekers, you know. She's a little bit also younger, you know, than me, but also established in her career. We were both, you know, bored. And then she said to me, "Do you know how to go sledding?" I said, "No, we don't have snow in the Philippines." But we had snow all over, you know, in Ohio,
convent. Yeah.
Yeah, in the convent, you know.
Yeah.
And sisters used to tell me, "Faye," they said, "Stop ordering more snow."
Oh.
They said, "We've had enough," you know, because it was my first time to experience snow. And so they were telling me, "Enough, you know, don't send." So anyway, make the long story short, she had this idea, and we went to the kitchen, and the nuns were already, you know, sleeping for their siesta. And I said, "No," I said, I don't want us to get in trouble. She says, no, they're all sleeping. They wouldn't know what we are going to be doing. Well, besides, she says, we'll just borrow something. And I did not know what she had, you know, in mind. And then when she handed me this big tray, the trays were really, you know, not the small trays that we had.
Yeah, too. Big aluminum tray. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, like, because it's a
commercial kitchen almost. Yeah, kitchen,
yep, exactly. And so we went in the back, in the wooded area, and we found, you know, a little hill to go down, and she instructed me what to do. Well, it was really hilarious, and I really had so much fun that at the end of, I think we were there for 2 hours, you know, and my voice, you know, became, you know, hoarse, because we were just laughing,
yeah.
You know, and our face were red from the wind, you know, so we went, we tiptoed back to the kitchen to return the trays. I don't think, you know, we were found, but there must be a few nuns who found us, because it was right behind the rooms, you know, of the nuns, you know, that's facing the wooded area. Well, they probably, you know, just turned their...
So this wasn't something you brought to confession, Feli, I guess.
No, or might have, I can't remember.
Okay.
But we had fun.
You had fun. That's okay. Now, at that time, as you were indicating, I should have we're backwards introducing this a little bit, but you were in the novitiate of the Sylvania Franciscans at Lord's College, now Lord's University in Ohio. Now, after 3 years, you left the convent. But you wrote in your book that first and foremost, the experience of discerning your vocation gave you the gift of prayer.
Exactly, yeah.
In particular, centering prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, could you describe what centering prayer has meant in your life in terms of helping you find your way through that labyrinth?
Okay. Well, they really complement one another, you know. Centering prayer is, there are many kinds of prayer. We have the rote kind of prayer, but
like the rosary
that, which is an example, is the rosary or the novenas, you know.
Sure.
And back in the Philippines, I've used them.
Yeah.
You know? So when I went to the convent, I was introduced to the centering prayer, and I think at that time it was really new in terms of the book that just came out.
Okay.
By Basil Pennington, and I found it and I read it, and I think I was at a point in my life where a lot of things have happened, you know, while I was in the Philippines taking care of, you know, my siblings, helping, you know, financially and all of that, that I just needed the time just to relax and be and do nothing and just, you know, enjoy the silence and the presence, you know, of God.
Yeah.
And so... the centering prayer is very much, you know, like that. You quiet yourself, your body, and then you center on your breathing. And often also you have a mantra or a word that you come back to.
Okay.
If you want to, you know, or just, you know, your breathing. And in that centering prayer, the idea is you consent to the presence that is in you and around you. And
the presence of?
Of God, you know.
Okay.
Or people will say higher power, creator,
sure.
You know, and all. So so while doing that, there's some vulnerability because you don't know what's going to happen in that 20 minutes, you know, that you sit down, you know. It can be...
You don't know what God's going to say. You can't control it.
Yeah, you completely, you know, give yourself, you know, to that 20 minutes and then allow whatever, you know, might
happen, right.
You know. Thomas Keating, after Basil Pennington wrote the book, both of them continued the centering prayer being, you know, taught in with other,
okay.
You know, people.
Okay.
And Thomas Keating was the one who really made it very popular and very, you know, common, that it is now called, you know, contemplative outreach.
Ah, okay. Yeah. That's a more familiar term for me. Now, you did, now the centering prayer, again, things like labyrinth and centering, I'm a very kind of traditional Catholic, and I'm not actually as well read probably as either one of you, to tell you the honest truth. So those both, I start thinking, New Agey bells start going off. But you describe the difference, that there is a difference between Zen meditation and centering prayer.
Yes.
And could you describe what the essential separation there or difference would be?
The similarity is the quieting.
Right.
But the difference is in the Zen meditation, you sit to be enlightened.
Personally enlightened, almost.
There is no name for it, It's just spelled enlightenment with big letter E.
Okay.
And so, but it's not named.
Which
is the big difference between centering prayer or contemplative, where you know that the relationship when you sit there, you have, you are there, consenting to that relationship with the divine.
Right.
And so, for lack of better words, on my part, that there is a person.
Right. It's almost scarier. If it's just enlightenment, it's almost like I'm enlightening myself. Mm-hmm. But if it's with God, then it's almost, and the more that God has a face,
yes,
it almost gets scarier because it's almost like, gee, this is
It gives you a personal relationship.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
And
it personalizes it, I feel.
Yeah, that's why I think with during the time that there is Zen was also popular,
right?
And then we're doing centering. We were cautioned that when you sit there and you are not really connecting, and you're just after the enlightenment, it can really go negative,
right?
For you, the person doing it.
Yeah, there's lots of just a slight aside, just on a personal thing. I do this exercise called Tai Chi do for my knees and everything. And when I first learned this Tai Chi, it was at I guess it's a Buddhist thing. So they had a Buddhist
statue
in the corner. And I guess some of the, whenever I would do that, just to be, I guess, protect myself, I would, do a sign of the cross just to myself.
Sure.
Because I'm kind of saying, I'm owned by you. Mm-hmm. I'm here because the exercise is good for my knees and my back.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I respect the people here, but I belong to you.
Yes.
And different people said, you have to stop going to that Tai Chi because it's dangerous spiritually.
Yeah.
I said, well, do you watch TV? But, that's pretty dangerous too. But anyway, sorry to digress on the personal thing there, but thank you for that distinction. Now, Heather, you read quite widely and all that kind of thing. Is there a kind of prayer? Was it anything like centering prayer that you came back to and you're sort of when you kind of reentered your more in intensity in your faith?
So I grew up in the Catholic Church. I went to Mass 3 times a week. I went to Catholic school. So I grew up with a Portuguese grandma and an Italian grandma. So I was very well versed in the rosary and Mass and kneeling. And I think for me, that didn't personalize it. So I tried all kinds of things. I did journaling, Bible study with journaling, Bible study with, we were talking about different types of learning. There's rote learning, there's listening. I found for me that writing my goals and my prayers was very productive. And that they say, some call him the D word, I call him the enemy because I don't give him any glory, but that when you don't necessarily always say your prayers out loud, maybe write them,
right?
That the enemy can't hear them. And they're written down also as a goal or
that's
a checklist.
Interesting thought. Yeah.
So I would read books and I learned to take my own religion and make it a relationship.
I think for each person, it's really an evolution. Less like, what Heather is explaining. I think for me also, it's the same way, I started because that's what I have learned, is to say rote prayers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it came to a point in my life where I didn't want to do any of those. I just want to be quiet and be present to the presence.
Right.
And currently, because of being part of the Benedictine, community, we have been doing, or I have been doing also what we call Lectio Divina.
Right.
And so, Heather was saying, when you read the Bible, and all that, you approach it, whether you put yourself during that time that it happened, you know, and then see how the drama, you know, or the story unfolds. You know?
Right.
I'm beginning to. Just recently, I read about Peter and Jesus when he asked, you know, Peter to come follow him. You know?
Right.
And it's about the boat, you know, where he got, you know, a lot of fish, you know. No? In the lecture, what we would do is you choose every day what part of the Bible, you know, you would like to read.
Right.
And then sit, you know, with it during the centering prayer. But I've been finding out lately, for a month now, I've just been focused on that part, on that story of Peter, and he was not Peter in the story, he was still Simon.
Right.
You know, and I was, and I think it's all related to the book, you know, that I, you know, that I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And
because he had doubts.
Yeah.
And he turned it into faith.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So.
And you had to have a lot of faith to make a project like this, because there's not been a lot of them, none of them in our community. So that takes a lot of faith. You know? Because you see that vision that other people can't see.
Oh.
And that takes faith, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, didn't mean to go ahead there, Fede. Were you going to say something else?
It's really on. I also see faith as something, you know, that is not one done deal, you know.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, trust in God.
Right.
It's not a one done deal, you know.
Right.
And I think that's why I am fixated for the past month or so about, you know, that reading. You know, there's, for me, I believe that there is, you know, there's the growth, or I'm called to increase my faith,
right,
and trust, you know, in the Lord. Not that the other, you know, readings in the Bible don't, you know, teach us.
Sure.
But for now, for this particular time in my life, I am, you know, so focused, you know, on it.
Well, and you could say too that, you know, that you're going, you're kind of diving deeper into that particular reading, that particular gospel, uh-huh, over and over again.
Yeah.
That is a sort of rote prayer. Now, but that there's more there all the time. And
yes.
So that rote prayer entered into in the same spirit, if that is what God wants for you, can kind of bring that centering experience. So again, maybe it is the rosary that can do that. And of course, the ideal is that you're supposed to be, or is suggested that you be, reflecting on different mysteries of the rosary as you go through it, you know, so that to make it not just saying the words, but I guess we're talking about different ways of getting to the same thing. The important thing is to be open to whatever the Lord has to say, and through these different avenues, and I'm listening, Lord, and what do you have to say, and make it not so much what I have to say, but so I'll stop saying it and let you say something more here. How did all of these experiences, and we'll just intro this, and we'll in about a minute, and then we'll come to the end of this particular segment. But the experiences that you've outlined in Broken and Beloved, they brought you to a place of commitment that resulted in Labyrinth Outreach Services. Mm-hmm. And how did you find that? The mindset that you had from the beginning, from your youth, you had a bit of an obstacle to overcome in moving to an apostolate that worked with formerly incarcerated women.
Mm-hmm.
As a youth, you had a certain attitude about people that fell on the wrong side of the law, mm-hmm, that you kind of had to get over. How would you describe that?
Well, growing up, you know, back home, I've heard it from adults, you know, from my parents, from my grandparents, that people who are behind bars are bad people, you know.
A danger to you.
A danger, you know, to me, you know. And I think at that time what they wanted to, for not just me but for the rest of my siblings, is to be disciplined and to do what is right.
Right.
The message is, you do wrong, you will be, you know, in prison, you know. And these people are really bad, you know. They kill, you know, and all of those, you know. And so I did say in my book that when I founded Labyrinth House, the idea was really just to focus on women who were, in my term and in my word, you know, safe in the sense that they were just homeless, you know, have addiction and have mental problems, you know, and poor, you know. And then I tried to grow that program or that, you know, organization in 4 years. And I have had, you know, people, you know, who came, you know, and helped. But it just wouldn't go. It just wouldn't go, you know, until, you know, we were told by Karen Sangerly that there are women in the west side of Bloomington, you know, who nobody's taking care of them, you know, and all that. And of course, you know, my first impulse was, no, I can't do it. I don't know. I don't have any experience, you know, with them. Just a little back up here. Even before we were told about these women in the West Side who need help and just recently, you know, came out from prison, the founder, I think his name is Pastor Brown, the founder of Joy Care Center, approached me when we were still, you know, in doing the Labyrinth House. And he said to me, Faye, why don't you do the women and we will do the men? And again, you know, my reaction at that time was, no, I can't do it, you know. But I brought it to the board, and the board, you know, didn't, you know, agree with it because of many, you know, reasons, you know, at the time. And so we didn't, you know, pursue it. And then, Father John Shea, he was a priest here in town, also came and told me, you know, why don't you do the women? I think in my, now looking back, had the Lord, and I know that the Labyrinth is not mine, and it's, you know, it's, I was just instrumental, you know, in making it, you know, or organizing it. Had he told me, you work with the women in the first place, I would not have, you know, done it. But I think in my looking back, it was kind of like the Lord went roundabout ways through the back door. And so after, you know, that then there were, you know, also board members at that time who were more open, you know, to the population to help. And so, and the West Bloomington Revitalization Program or Project is really very welcoming, you know, for us, you know, to do it. And so I said, okay, maybe, you know, I think the turning point for me was I was so scared. And so I said to myself, the only way I can really, you know, find out if I will continue, you know, to nurture, you know, this organization is for me to see a person rather than just, you know, hearing the bias, you know, about, you know, these women. And so I volunteered to go to the prison and interview two women who were going to be released, you know, to McLean County. And that personal, you know, contact, you know, with them really turned, you know, my attitude and all my, you know, feelings about them, you know. And I recognized that it could have been the other way, and also that their aspirations are my aspirations too, but because of circumstances in their lives, you know, they ended up, you know, on the other, you know, side, you know. Ever since that time now, you know, I just continue, you know, to fall in love, you know, with these women. They are my heroes because every day, you know, you and I, you know, meet all kinds of barriers, you know, to overcome. They do have similar barriers too, whether looking for a job or relationships, you know, and all that. But they also, their other barriers that they deal with every day is internal in terms of, you know, the negative, you know, things they tell about themselves, you know, like, you know, you're bad, you know, you're not worthwhile, you ended up in prison, da-da-da-da, and all of those things, you know. And when you have those two things, you know, going simultaneously, you will really reach out for the alcohol or, you know, or for the drugs to calm you down, you know. And so so I really admire them with their intentions, you know, to learn from their mistakes, you know, and stay on track and, you know, cooperate, you know, with the people who are, you know, helping them.
Thank you. Yeah, that's great. We'll just take one more little break here. You're listening to Catholic Conversations, and we're going to be right back after another little short break.
You're listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio.
Are you prepared to vote?
Moral theology in our tradition also teaches us that one may not vote for an enemy of religion or of freedom, except to exclude a worse enemy of religion and of freedom.
Learn more so you're prepared when you vote this November. Visit EWTN.com/vote for everything Catholic voters need to know before picking up a ballot.
This is Paul Moore, sitting in for Jason Bramley here in Catholic Conversations. We're here with Faye Sebastian and Heather Canuel, and we're talking about Faye's new book, Broken and Beloved, A Journey of Discovery, available on Amazon. Now, Heather Canuel.
Yes.
As we talked a bit before about how you had kind of traced a labyrinth of your own, and at one point then you were in prison, and but you learned more about your faith and what you wanted out of your life in there, and that a lot of us go through different things, but you went through it in a very sort of specific way, and of course you share prison with Paul and Peter and a lot of the greatest saints of the church and apostles who came to some of their highest spiritual experiences in behind bars. Mm-hmm. Now, prior to your release, a counselor at Logan Correctional Center suggested that you consider Bloomington as your new residence after your belief, or after your release. Do you know why she suggested that, or was that just?
Well, she suggested that because I was great at doing hair. And I even, some of the staff and counselors would even come and get their hair done by me in there, and they weren't supposed to. And she suggested that this would be a great town for me to rebuild because of the resources. And she named one of the top salons here in town and thought that I would be a super duper success there. And she was right at both.
Oh, okay. Okay. Now, do you remember your first contact with Labyrinth, or was that?
Yes, I actually do. I know that I kind of begged, I wanted the help from Labyrinth because where I grew up is a very blue-collar town, very desolate, no programs, not much funding, but we're working on changing that right now. But there were so many opportunities here and resources that I didn't have where I was from. And I knew I kept failing because I kept going back with no resources. So I knew that this community would give me the help that I needed to get me on that plan and that path.
Okay. So some of the choices that you mentioned in the circumstances you mentioned there, Faye, in your life, that people that have a more stable background, they might not have to make some of those choices because things are set out a little differently for them, and so it's Heather had to kind of find her own labyrinth at street level,
literally.
Yeah. Faye, now the process of writing Broken and Beloved, what's that process of writing the book been like for you?
It took me 2 years, you know, to write the book. Of course, you know, I stopped, you know, here and there with all my involvement in the community. And I also kept it secret to everybody, you know. But I have been, there are two parts to the book. One part is my life and the other part is the labyrinth.
Yes.
But originally, I did not want my life in the book, you know. So I had the manuscript of the labyrinth history and the women's, you know, lives already sitting on my desk for over a year. And then somebody connected me with my editor, Charlene Homan.
Yes.
And so I gave it to her, and then she said, okay, then we'll meet after that, and I'll give you feedback. The first thing she asked me was, have you considered writing your personal history together with the book? I remember I cringed, you know, because I said, I don't want to be exposed.
Yeah.
You know, but then, you know, she said, but the two are intertwined. She says, people would like to know, you know, the person who,
right,
you know, who developed it and, you know, the organization and all. And so I said, give me a couple weeks or more, you know, just to sit on it and pray about it, you know. And that's what I did, you know. But, and she was also very, I mean, Charlene is very instrumental in asking the right questions, you know, about my life, and then helping me to see how all those things, you know, are all, you know, connected and,
right,
you know, history with it. And so, in the end, you know, I said, okay, I think, you know, it's all right. And so that's how, you know, it ended up with, you know, two stories in one book.
Right, right. The labyrinth of your life led to labyrinth outreach. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a very good explanation. Now, how does it feel, Heather Canuel, to have moved from a client of labyrinth to a mentor of and advocate for formerly incarcerated women?
It's kind of awesome. When I first needed the services, I made friends with a young lady who's no longer there, but we've kept track over the years. So going from needing or asking for help with their resources to going in, doing free haircuts for the girls, building their self-esteem, helping the Y raise lots and lots of money, being a part of, That's What She Said, a play in which I was able to do hair and makeup, and just growing with Labyrinth is just amazing. Faley's inspired me so much that I am working on my own grant. So, you know, it's really just inspiring.
Well, that's a very good answer, too, there, yeah.
And if I may add, this is exactly, you know, also one of the reasons, you know, for the book and also, you know, for people, you know, like, you know, Heather, so that others who are on their path or in their journey,
yeah,
that they know it can happen, it can be done, you know.
Yes.
No matter what kind of addictions or, you know, things, you know, that you've had, you know, in your life, you know, if you put your mind, you know, to it, you know, and ask for help.
Yes.
You will be changed, you know.
Yeah.
With that, you know, and I think, you know, you also read that in my book, for so many years, you know, I was addicted.
Yes.
A relationship that I thought was okay.
I thought I'd let you bring that up, but you had a boyfriend.
A boyfriend, yeah.
And it turned out, although he had many admirable qualities and loved to help people, it wasn't working as a relationship.
No, it wasn't. I think at the time, also the timing when I, you know, met this guy, I was very young. I was very naive. And I didn't know also, it's embarrassing to admit, but it is true, you know, in my mind, you know, I was thinking, there's nothing wrong, you know, with it, you know, we're both, you know, good people.
Yeah.
He's involved in changing people's lives also. And, but it was two good people, wrong, you know, wrong timing and wrong, you know, for that matter, you know. And so it was an unhealthy relationship, really. And I didn't realize also that though we were not physically together most of the time,
yes,
my attachment to him was so deep emotionally.
Right. So that taught you, and I think this relationship in one form or another, on again, off again, was like 40 years?
40 years, almost. 40
so this
years,
is, yeah. This, you know, so people have addictions. That's yes, a good length of time. Uh-huh. And it is hard to break. And you might not even realize it was an addiction until you, I think you read a book, didn't you?
I on the last time that I met him and we saw each other, I said to him, then I will just move on with my life without you, you know. And I was flying back to Ohio, and that literally the book fell off from the shelf from a bookstore.
Because,
and then when I picked it up, I saw how to break your addiction to a person. It just really, you know, it was feel like, you know, a ton of bricks, you know, fell on me. And I said, oh, my gosh, you know, so you could be, you know. All the time I'm just thinking you can just be addicted to bad stuff like, you know, alcohol and drugs and sex, you know, and all of this. I had no inkling, you know. And so it was really a hard process for me. On the other hand, also, it was, I won't say easy, but once I recognized I was addicted to him, then I knew how to stay out of it, you know, by following the 12-step program.
Right.
You know? And really, again, you know, surrendering, you know, to God that this is, you know, this is not what you planned me for my life. It's not him, you know.
Yeah. But how many people respect the process enough that anything can be an addiction that they actually take a 12-step process because they can't break up with a relationship that isn't working? How many people consider that? They tend to just think, oh, I can let it go anytime I want to. I just don't want to. But you treated it with the respect of that an addiction has to be treated with in order to let it go.
Yeah. And to recognize that it is a lifelong process.
Right.
You know? Because after I broke away, you know, from him and I tried, you know, to stay sober.
Right. From him, not from alcohol. Yeah.
Well, he was the alcohol in my life.
Isn't that interesting? Wow.
This high. You know?
Yes.
And my high was his letters. Each time he would write me and he would say that line, if I were to get married, it would be you.
I'm not going to, but if I was going to be married, it would be you. That would keep you hanging on, as they say.
It gave me this hope.
Yeah.
I used to describe it like, you know, a carrot, you know, in your coming after, you know, the bunny.
Yes. Yeah.
After, you know, the carrot. It is a lifelong process. It's a continuous thing. It's not one deal.
Yes. I know. Yeah.
But the process of making the internal, you know, change has to happen.
Right.
And then, of course, you know, every so often you continue to have, you know, some temptations.
Yes.
Like he continued to write to me, and I didn't, at that point, I knew already where my high was coming from. And so I didn't, you know, respond, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny. My husband knew, you know, everything. But the last letter I got from him as we were already married, and when he got the letters from the mailbox and I saw it, I said, oh my gosh, it's from him.
Yeah.
And he's still, you know, writing, you know, and all that. I didn't write anymore. And once you know that you're done with that relationship,
right,
there is no desire to find out anymore, you know, what happened to him, you know.
Right.
Because a few of my relatives who have read the book called me and said, so what happened to you?
Yeah, yeah.
I said, I don't know. It's no longer important, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, to God, of course, and you'd pray for his soul, but it's no longer important for you. You're not addicted to him as a relationship.
No.
Thank you very much for that for opening up on that particular thing to show that we can all be addicted, and we are all addicted in various ways, large and small. I'm just going to read this little, this is from this week's gospel, and it's fairly short, reading from Matthew. And then if I could ask you both, if you have any comments on it, we've got about 2 or 3 minutes left here. Mm-hmm. So I'll just read it here. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew, Matthew 22:15-21. The Pharisees went off and plotted how they might entrap Jesus in speech. They sent their disciples to him with the Herodians, saying, Teacher, we know that you're a truthful man and you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. And you're not concerned with anyone's opinion, for you do not regard a person's status. Tell then, what's your opinion? Is it lawful to pay the census tax to Caesar or not? Knowing their malice, Jesus said, Why are you testing me, you hypocrites? Show me the coin that pays the census tax. They handed him the Roman coin. He said to them, Whose image is this and whose inscription? They replied, Caesar's. At that he said to them, Then repay to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and to God what belongs to God. The Gospel of the Lord. I don't see any connection between that and what we talked about today, but I'm hoping that one of you two do. What do you, would you like to comment there, Felix?
the thing that came to my mind is the word testing.
Right.
With this new sector in my or chapter in my life, you know, having written the book, you know, and doing, you know, a lot of book signing and all of that, you know, and of course, you know, in my mind, you know, I was thinking, I want, you know, the book to have a good sale.
Sure.
Part of it also will help continue to help, you know, the women. So for me, the word testing has really I relate to it. Because then it's a test of what is it that I really want my book, you know, to, what my book wants, what was my purpose, you know, for writing the book, you know. And I can really get sidetracked, you know, in terms of I want, you know, the, of course, the returns, you know, and all.
Right.
So the word testing, you know, is for me personally, is a test of, continuously, you know, asking and going back to the reason why I wrote, you know,
right.
You know, and I have been, you know, in this past, you know, couple months, have been tested in many ways. You know,
right.
Where do I really lean on? You know,
yes.
The monetary part of it,
amen.
Or you know, what was really the purpose? You know, for me in writing the book.
Right.
I wrote the book for three things. One is, you know, to honor, you know, the women who spent, you know, time behind bars.
Yes.
Or, you know, rebuilding their lives. I also wrote the book for the many hands and hearts who, you know, helped.
Yes.
Labyrinth become a reality.
And there's 15 pages just about of thank yous in there, so I can testify to that you are giving good credit to the community. Yes.
And then third is I want people to also recognize in the same way that I have learned to recognize that God is actively present, you know, in our lives.
Amen. Amen. Thank you very much, Faye Lee. Heather, did you have anything? As I say, it's a rather interesting gospel reading in regard to what we talked about today. But do you have anything?
Yeah, absolutely. The first few sentences, it says, "Teacher, we know that you're a truthful man and that you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. You're not concerned with anyone else's opinion, for you do not regard a person's status." For me, Faye Lee gave us her truth. She gives truth to the women, and she eliminates that tape playing in their head by giving them a new status.
Perfect. Wonderful. Wonderfully said, Heather. You should be doing this instead of me. So thank you very much. Now, thanks to our guests, Faye Lee Sebastian and Heather Canule of HBH Hair Salon in Bloomington. And HBH stands for Heather.
Hair by Heather.
Hair by Heather. Faye Lee Sebastian's first book, Broken and Beloved, A Journey of Discovery. It's available on Amazon. Did you remember that? Amazon. For simplicity of searching, Faye Lee's name is spelled F-E-L-I, if you're putting that in your search engine. So you've been listening to Catholic Conversations with Paul Moore on the Catholic of the Catholic Post. That's me, a Go Post. Sitting in for Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. As Mother Teresa used to say, God bless and good luck.
You've been listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the generous support of Meyer Bramley Insurance, serving Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas. Meyer Bramley Insurance can be reached online at mbi.agency or via phone at 844-890-2626. Catholic Conversations, where we talk about faith, family, and finance. Download our podcasts at CatholicSpiritRadio.com.